Can I wrangle you down to that?
What's the phrase? You can polish a turd?
When we've done that for 99 episodes.
Reading are only above the relegation places on goal difference, so why is there such a good vibe around the place? A 2-2 draw with leaders Brighton lifts the gloom after two back-to-back away defeats, and Reading now head into a week that sees them take on the MK Dons in the EFL Cup, followed by a trip down the M4 to face Cardiff. We'll look at just how the Stam era is rolling along as we get into the five-game mark, and cast our eye on the mailbag, which is full to the brim this week. In News Bites, we've got news of two big signings, plus one almost through the door, plus some mixed news on the injury front. All that and much more on the Tyler Sen Podcast, episode 99. And, much like a good 99, we've got a flake in it this week.
Well, I hope not. It is the very start of the show.
I meant more the flake as in the good chocolatey kind, rather than a flaky person.
I thought you meant that at some point I was just going to give out and give up on this show.
No, not at all. Not this week, anyway. Okay. That voice is Mr. Johnny Williams, our deputy editor at thetalisend.com. I am Dan Wimbush, editor of thetalisend.com, and thank you very much for joining us on this 99th edition of the show. One more to go to the big 100, Johnny.
Just one more.
Did you think we'd make it this far?
Well, hopefully we can make it to 106. I think once you get to the 100, then you're just looking at that 106 mark, and I think that'll be the special one. Then maybe we can make 107.
Yeah,
I don't think any podcast's ever done that in the Championship before.
Oh, yeah, no. It's record-setting stuff. I'd like to say we've got some extravagant plans lined up for our 100th show, but at the moment there's a few ideas in the pipeline, but nothing nailed down. So hopefully keep you posted on that anyway. But as I said, lots to get to on the show, including two Championship games at Newcastle and at home to Brighton to get into. So let's, without further ado, get tucked into those in the recap.
View from the Tarhurst end.
Recapping this week's Championship action.
So Johnny, we've only taken 1 point out of the last nine, but I don't want to speak for you, but I'm feeling strangely positive about this whole Yap Stam era. Maybe it's basking in that warm afterglow of a draw with the league leaders on Saturday. But for me, it goes beyond that. It goes into the way Reading gave Newcastle a really good game at St James's Park. Yes, you look at the scoreline, they got a 4-1 beating to a team that had lost their first two games. But the way they played, the way they fought, was just so encouraging from the 2-0 defeat of Wolves the week before.
Absolutely. And you'd imagine that going to a place like St James's Park, if you go 2-1 down immediately after half-time, thanks to a questionable penalty decision by all accounts, it would be quite easy for those players to just collapse and essentially give up the fight. But they didn't. They crawled back into the game. We had a goal disallowed for offside. Roy Behrens hit the bar. I think that might have been in the first half as well. But they certainly had enough chances to show that they were willing to put up the fight. And I think you saw in the Brighton game as well, I mean, it's easy to say something like, if you look back at last season and we'd conceded that early goal against Brighton in the second half, would we have just given up? Would we have got back into the game? You know, you can never say, but you'd imagine that we wouldn't have put up as good a fight as we have in these last two matches.
Yeah, you can count on one hand the number of times that Nigel Adkins or Steve Clarke or even a Brian McDermott side, bless him, came back into a game. You know, they got a few equalisers, but, you know, to get the point against Brighton and to really run Newcastle close. And I mentioned Newcastle lost their first two games, but this is a strong side, and you saw the moments of quality that separated the game. You look at the key figures involved in the big moments for them. Players like Dwight Gale, you know, £10 million signing. Matt Ritchie scoring the penalty, £12 million signing. This was a game that, I mean, we all wrote it off on the podcast. All five of us in the prediction league predicted a defeat, which came to roost, although none of us got the score right.
I had us losing by three goals, but sadly I didn't back us to score.
Oh no, well there you go, it's regrets. So nobody really expects anything. So for me, it was a net positive to see Reading have so much fight and really so much of the game. If you look at the match stats, they've again won possession, 58-42%. They've had more shots, they've had 13-11, although admittedly only three of those were on target from Reading compared to seven from Newcastle. And they've had nine corners as well. They've been very much in the game. And like you said, Behrens hits the bar. They get the penalty from John Swift that McCleary tucks away very nice. And they should have had a second penalty as well. Some not brilliant refereeing on the night. The sort of flashpoint started in the first couple of minutes. A goal, it seemed there was a goal for Newcastle. Dwight Gale getting himself on the score sheet with the hand of, I don't know, not God.
The hand of Gale, yeah.
The hand of Gale, I like it. Shades of Denver Bar there, Johnny.
Yeah, although Denver Bar, I think, was a slight bit more subtle about it. As I remember, his hand was sort of right next to his torso rather than stretched out like Superman. I mean, it would have been absolutely disgraceful, outrageous if it had been given. And, I mean, players always appeal as if, you know, they are completely right. But you could see in that moment that the Reading players were absolutely incensed that that decision was given. And luckily, I think for the referee, he managed to overturn it. Otherwise, I think he could have been spending a few weeks in League Two.
Yeah, the assistant referee thankfully spotting it and stopping what could have been a really nasty atmosphere early on.
A very different St. James's Park for him, perhaps, down in Exeter.
Yeah, quite. Unfortunately for Reading, they couldn't stay on parity for too much longer. A free kick routine, ball pings around the box and gets buried. So Reading go a goal down. And at that point, given the way they'd played at Wolves, just a few days before, you were sat there. I mean, I was listening to it on the radio. I was fearing the worst. I thought, oh, no, here we go. A rampant Newcastle. We'd seen it, you know, 6-7 years previously when Brendan Rodgers' side went to St. James's Park and capitulated in quite the same way to show Lamiobe's magic. but on this occasion, Reading fought back. They came out. They didn't do what they did against Wolves and just sort of struggled to get in the game. They went for it. They realised that Newcastle's defence wasn't amazing. They gave it a good go. And they deservedly got level, won the penalty from John Swift, who again is involved in a goal. He seems to be involved in, I think you said the stats before we went on air.
I think it's all but two. One being the second goal against Brighton, and also Roy Behrens' against Plymouth. He put the through ball to Gunter, who shot, and then it rebounded to Behrens.
Yeah, so he's been involved, obviously scoring a couple and setting up another couple as well. Plus, if you count his goal in pre-season against Bournemouth as well, really showing his quality. So Reading get level at half-time. You're thinking, great, go on. You can go on and win this. And unfortunately, they get that sucker punch. And unfortunately, Johnny, we're again talking about a set piece. Unfortunately, this time it leads to a penalty. A lot of debate about this one at the time. It's for a seeming push. I think it's from Chris Gunter. There was a bit of a scramble of bodies. Certainly, you know, no more grappling than you'd seen in 100 other championship games. But unfortunately, the decision goes against Reading on this occasion.
Yeah, and much as I hate to criticise referees, it is fair to wonder whether if that was Reading, who had been grappled and brought down inside the box, whether he would have given that in Reading's favour. I think having given the penalty just before half-time to Reading and obviously the vociferous Newcastle home crowd baying for their first win, baying for a good result, baying for even a point, you can possibly understand why the referee perhaps caved into a little bit of pressure.
Well, if you're a 50-50 decision and you've got that going in your favour, I think you're going to lean. I think it's only natural that you're going to lean towards the as you say, ferocious home crowd. I mean, we saw it in the Premier League at the weekend. In the Stoke-Man City game, wasn't it?
Stoke-Man City, yeah.
Yeah, that grappling's being clamped down on. There has been directives issued, and it's obviously not just across the Premier League, it's in the Championship as well. I think Rafa Benitez said on Sky today, he is someone that, as long as you apply the rules fairly across everybody, then he's happy. And I think, again, I can't speak for you, but I agree. But then you've got to do it for everyone, and we're going to see a lot more penalties if they're going to apply the rules like that.
Absolutely, and I think it's difficult for any referee, you know, to monitor eight people doing separate things all at the same time. I mean, you bring up the example of the Stoke-Man City game. I think Ryan Shawcross perhaps is a bit of a serial offender. As I remember, he's had a few given against him for that sort of thing in the past. So good spot from Mike Dean and Raheem Sterling. No intention to play the ball, completely blocked him off. When you've got players next to each other, you know, a hand here, a hand there, six of one, half a dozen of the other, it's a lot more difficult for the referee to make an adjudication on that. So ultimately, what you want is consistency, but in an ideal world, that's very possible. But unfortunately, football and the speed of it makes this not a very ideal world to enact that rule.
Yeah, and look, I'm not going to sit here and completely bash refereeing. I've never done it for a start, so I'm not going to sit here and say the right or wrong decision. My own personal view is I think it's a little bit soft, but you know, hey, that's what football's about. It's about opinions. So again, just a bit of consistency. It's all we ask for. It's very early days in the season as well, so that's one just to keep an eye on, as well as dissent bookings, which we'll come on to in the Brighton game as well. So we're going to go behind, but again, they push the play forward. They keep coming at Newcastle, a spirit that we hadn't seen last year. Reading teams far too often had their head down, slumped down, and just sort of, you know, they rarely got thrashed, but they just never looked like getting in the game. This didn't happen. They went for it. They should have had a penalty of their own. Didn't get given. Stam incensed by the decision after the game, and rightly so. And a couple of minutes later, they go at the other end, concede a free kick, and it's a magnificent strike from Dwight Gale. And that's the difference, as I said earlier, Johnny, between the two teams. Newcastle have got, you know, £10 million players like Dwight Gayle who've got that moment of magic in their locker. And Reading, unfortunately, are bringing on untapped potential or hidden diamonds, you know, people like Joseph Mendes and Yaku Mata, who may well go on to be great players, but that's the difference between the very best sides and just an average Championship side.
Absolutely. You look at this game and you say, I think it's a combination of luck and of quality that really got Newcastle the win. Like you say, £12 million for Dwight Gayle. They persuaded Matt Ritchie to come down from the Premier League and Bournemouth to come down to Newcastle, or to go up to Newcastle, I suppose.
Yep.
Quite a long journey. Whereas, as you say, we're bringing in free transfers and speculative punts, if you like. But I think the important thing from this was the fans came away with belief and the players came away with belief as well. And it's something from the Brighton game as well. I think had we gone into Cardiff or had we gone into the international break on a losing run, the players and the fans would have started questioning things. Whereas I think in the last two games, everyone has seen enough to believe in Stam.
Yeah, and we went through this on last week's show. You're not with us, but I said to Dave and to Westy, it's what Brendan Rodgers didn't have when he was attempting something similar to what Stam's doing now. He didn't get those key early results and key moments of belief in the fan base. I said they got thrashed at Newcastle. They didn't get that first home win on the board for months. Whereas Stam's got that credit. He's got a good result against the league leaders. He's got an opening win on the board and he's shown that his team can go up to the very best teams in this division and give it a go. Okay, they came out on the losing side, but they gave it a good go, and that's so important because it gives the fans belief, it gives the players belief, and it keeps the whole vibe around the place. I mean, I've written on it today on thetarlesend.com. You can go check that out. Why I'm pretty happy with the Stam era and why I think this is such a break from what we've seen previously. So I won't go into too much of that there. Head over to the website. So we mentioned it, 2-2 draw with Brighton. People, again, fearing the worst, Johnny. I'm the only person that didn't predict a defeat, and even then, you know, I only predicted a draw. But Reading, in the very first minute, they name an unchanged side, and credit to them, they go and get the goal early on. Behrens makes a great little twisting run down the left, draws a free kick, and Johnny Swift, the man you picked out in pre-season, let's give you your dues. I'm not going to give you them too many this season, so, you know.
The man I voiced my pleasure about, shall we say.
You did.
In an earlier podcast.
Absolutely. And that pleasure very much justified in the opening couple of minutes at the Mad Stad. Curls home a free kick and to put Reading into the lead with several fans, dare I say, not in the ground to see it due to some various shenanigans before the game that saw a fire break out in one of the warehouses next to the Mad Stad, set a substation on fire and caused chaos around the Medeski. Turnstiles weren't working, food wasn't available.
No DJ mega party for a while.
Well, you know, every cloud. So, you know, some fans still filing into the ground, missing this effort from Swift. But, you know, we touched on it earlier, but, you know, how great a signing has Swift been so far?
He certainly has. I mean, I think I do worry when you see him, when you see Reading with their backs against the wall and perhaps when he doesn't have the time to do what he likes, because he's a very skillful player and he enjoys beating players and, you know, doing what he can. I worry that, like Billy the Bee said in our sort of how we did for Brentford, he can go missing in the big game. So, I mean, for now, he certainly seems like a very good signing. He, like we said, he's been involved in nearly everything good that has happened going forward for Reading. And so you have to hope that he can continue that form, because at the moment, you know, he's on set pieces. He can hit a shot from range. He's very dangerous in terms of his passing, but also in terms of his dribbling. He seems to get out of tight spaces very well indeed as well. So he's very good with the ball at his feet. And you have to say that he's probably been the most impressive player at the club so far this season.
Yeah, and we've talked about this on previous episodes of the show. He is a man that is happy to grab the ball in a tight space. And too often in previous years, Reading players have been scared to do that. They've not wanted to play the slightly risky pass. They've gone sideways. They've gone backwards. And Swift's someone that's like, give me the ball, I'll try and make something happen. It's not going to work all the time, but it's a bit more exciting and it gives you that much more of an attacking outlet. So that's very good to see. Unfortunately, again, Reading can't hold on to that advantage. So, and broken record, it's a set piece that does them again. Delivery comes in from the right-hand side. And was Joey Vandenberg pushed? He certainly thought he was by Glenn Murray. Whatever the case, it's Swift. It's Vandenberg's head that gets on it and puts it past his own goalkeeper, Al Habsi, for 1-1. Do you think it was a foul, Johnny? You've seen the replay?
No, I didn't think it was a foul at the time. It looked like an absolutely banging header into the top corner, didn't it? Certainly.
Oh, he made a great connection to Joey.
Oh, it's fantastic. Al Habsi had no chance.
World-class own goal.
Well, I'm not sure Al Habsi would have had a chance to put it straight at him, to be honest. We know how he likes a mistake. But no, I didn't think it was a foul on Vandenberg. And obviously, I think the more costly thing in the grand scheme of things was probably what ensued afterwards with the aforementioned dissent rule, which is coming in for this year.
Yeah, referees have been told very much to clamp down on players surrounding them and giving them abuse. And unfortunately, Joey was not happy that the goal stood. He gave the referee a bit of lip and got himself in the book. Now, again, I'm not one to have a go at referees because, again, I haven't done it. I'm not in that position. But watching on, why does Vandenberg get booked? But you see several Brighton players, Glenn Murray, one of the chief culprits, constantly giving seeming back chat to the not just the referee but the assistant referee, and they don't go in the book.
I think Knockhart was certainly one over in the corner as well.
That just riles teams up, and you could see Paul McShane at one stage just go over to the referee and say gesticulate and saying, "Well, why is he not in the book?"
It's that consistency which was the problem, and I think, you know, we have to mention the referee on this occasion. His consistency was the main problem because, like you said, with that dissent, Vandenberg gets a booking for it, but a number of Brighton players don't. In terms of fouls, I mean, you didn't quite know. No one knew whether when someone pushed someone or when someone tackled someone, whether the ref was going to give a foul. It seemed to be completely random. If a referee comes into a game and says, okay, I'll let a few things go, fair enough. You know that is a level playing field for both sides. Equally, if he says any contact, any slight pushes, any misdemeanours, it's a foul, then you adjust your game to that as well. The problem with this referee, I think it was Mike Jones, possibly, an ex-Premier League referee, or certainly refereed at the top level anyway. The problem with him was he didn't quite know, and you didn't quite know, and no one quite knew what was a foul and what wasn't. So you had constantly Brighton fans having a go at him for not giving something, or Reading fans having a go at him for giving something. And so it was just, you know, a wall of everyone's frustrations building up, basically.
Absolutely. But again, the positive thing from this is that Reading, once again, and they had 5-10 minutes of pressure straight after the goal, and they couldn't get out of their own half. And you did think, is this same old Reading? But no, they weathered the storm and then broke out, and they had several good chances to get themselves back in front. Kermigan had a shot from the top of the box. Danny Williams had an effort that was well blocked by Liam Rossini, who was getting dog's abuse from the East Stand. Liam Rossini, not a popular fellow among the Reading faithful, don't seem to have enjoyed him since he left. I know he made a few comments.
He certainly did, and when you speak out like that, I think you can expect what you're going to expect.
Yeah, I think he said at the time when he left for Ipswich, "No, I don't wish them well. You know, I was moved on because I was on too much money, pretty much." So, but you know, to be fair to Liam Rossini, you know, and I always do grudgingly have respect for these players. They just ride it out.
Yeah,
and he's a pro that's made a big career.
And I always liked Liam Rossini when he was here. To be fair, I thought he was. Certainly when he came in, I thought he was an upgrade on Graham Murty. I think he sort of came in around that time.
Late Murty, yeah.
Yeah, so I certainly thought he was one of our better players in that. It was in the relegation season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We swapped him with Sol, didn't we? So I certainly thought he was one of our better players. But, you know, when you come out and make a comment like that, you can expect.
The line that made me laugh was, guy who sits in front of me and to the left. Apologies if you're listening to this, but he was getting very angry at a lot of things. Like, he wasn't having a good day, I don't think. And he shouted out, I think it was something along the lines of, "You're a failure at life, Rossini." And I could only sit there thinking, I'm sure as he goes home to his 6-bedroom mansion in his sports car that he's really regretful of the life choices he's made.
Really regretful of that one comment he made in the press once.
Yeah, and while collecting his, you know, FA Cup final appearance and all that jazz. Anyway, but yeah, so Reading pushing forward, they have those chances, they get into halftime, and you think, you know, again, like at Newcastle, go on and get yourself into a lead here. Unfortunately, within 2 minutes of the restart, Brighton are back in the lead. Now, again, a bit like Wolves' opener, it's Paul McShane that's left exposed down the Reading right-hand side. Chris Guntry's sort of pushed up to catch another man, leaves McShane one-on-one. Ball goes over the top and he's well outpaced. Ball gets knocked across the box. Nobody picking up Knockhart, who had a fantastic first half and had a fantastic second half. And he slams it home, gives Brighton the lead. Just, again, if there's negatives to be had here, Johnny, it's the defensive organisation and the marking is just poor again.
Yeah, it is. And there's a lot of players that I think you can single out. Gunter pushing forwards, which exposes the back three against three of theirs. Abita doesn't know where Knockart is. And Evans, who's meant to be the shield, if you like.
Nowhere is he.
Yeah, he isn't even in the picture. I mean, this is one problem that I think we're going to see with Reading. We saw it in the first half against Brighton as well, in the first 15 minutes. When there's pressure on Reading, they still can't quite cope. They still can't quite get out. And we certainly saw that in the first 15 minutes of the game, which were dominated by Brighton. And I do wonder if this is just something that is systematic of the Stam's style, because it is so sort of patient, if you like, and about keeping possession. Whether the players just aren't quite on it when they come out in the second half. It is a sort of come out and, you know, we'll play ourselves into the game. Whereas we've seen Brighton and Newcastle both score in the first couple of minutes of the second half.
It's been a trait for Reading sides for the last few years, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, how often do we see them concede that goal? That, you know, they go in goalless and then concede straight after the break.
Yeah, I think I actually did a piece on that about a year ago that we conceded an abnormally high amount of goals in the sort of 46 to 60 minute range.
Yeah, something they maybe need to tune in their warm up or their half time team talk.
Well, Stam just give them a little bite and a bark when he sends them out.
But on that point about the defence, I think Stam's being quite clever about this in that he's quickly realised, it's not a brainwave, but the best form of defence for Reading is attack. Mm-hmm. Because they are stronger, that front sort of five or six players are stronger than the back, you know, four, five, six players. That as long as they're pushing and pushing high, it keeps the other team away from your back four and leaves you less exposed. Now, yeah, you still do get killed by, you know, balls over the top and piercing balls that leave you open to pace. But, you know, credit to Stam, because he's not an idiot, is he? He's a good tactical football player. He always was as a player, and he seems to have carried through that to management. And he's realised that if Reading are pressing, they're keeping the opposition away from their box, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I think Glenn Murray, who was on the Football on Five sort of recap show on Saturday night, made an interesting point as well, which was that because Yapstam is new at Reading, there's not much footage, if you like, of Reading and how we play. So certainly at the moment, we are a bit of an unknown quantity for many sides. There's not really too much to go on. Obviously, we're sort of seeing over the last three or four games that there is a bit of a style developing, if you like. But for many clubs, they still don't quite know how to do it. Like I say, I do think that we need to sort ourselves out under pressure, because when that back four is boxed in and you're having to play it around with Al Habsi and Gunter and McShane, I don't feel confident whatsoever. No. But, you know, it's a learning process for us as much as it is for the opposition scouts.
Yeah, and what I did like on Saturday, compared to the Wolves game especially, was the fact they did mix it up a little bit more. There were a few more sort of longer direct balls, quite a few lovely little switching passes.
I distinctly remember in our home game with Preston, Yaps, I sit sort of right behind Yapstam, and he was absolutely incensed when Jordan Abita played one long ball up the line, because you could see in that very first game that the players were under instruction, under a leash, to pass it short and not under any circumstances pass it long. And it's something that we've sort of discussed in the past as well, that adaptation. Brendan Rodgers, did he adapt? Maybe he did in the end, but he couldn't quite do it. Yapstam's obviously seen this and he said, right, whether I've not got the players or whether I've not got the opponents against me, something needs to change. And that is, you know, I think that's another encouraging sign from Stam as well.
You've just got to have that in your locker, haven't you? You can't be so rigid as they were at Wolves to be afraid to play a different ball. You know what? If the ball is on, play it. And as we saw those good crossfield hit balls, and that's what they've got when they get these more cultured players into the side. And that's probably why he's playing someone like a Vandenberg over Cooper, because Vandenberg can spot that pass and can make something a bit different. And that, if Reading can keep the opponents guessing the way they did Brighton, like you say, it'll be fantastic, because teams won't quite know how to set up against them, adds to the mystique and helps them get back into games. And again, a bit of an old school Reading goal, this one, Johnny, for the equaliser. Gareth McCleary storms down the right, cuts a lovely ball back across the box, but who's there to meet it? Paul McShane, lovely finish.
Absolutely brilliant finish, beating the keeper in the near post as well, and a bit of a classic sort of centre-back celebration as well. Doesn't quite know what to do, sort of waving his hands around like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely 100% deserved from Reading, who finished the game, much the stronger side. Kermigan, having a couple of great chances, hits the bar with a header, has a worldy overhead kick attempt that's well saved, and Reading just can't quite break it down and get the final goal. But they kept Brighton at arm's length right up until the very few minute, final few minutes when Joey van den Berg lives to regret his earlier booking. He gets a second yellow card. He takes one for the team, really. Brighton were pushing through in a dangerous position. He just stuck his arm out, brought the player down. Deserved second yellow in the final minute of the game. So if you had five on your list of Joey van den Berg appearances before a red card, congratulations, you win the sweepstake.
Yeah, he's just keeping up appearances from the Eredivisie, isn't he? Indeed. Well, one piece of credit, I don't know whether it was Joey or someone on the bench, though. I did notice that Joey came back to talk to the referee, and I think a few people wondering why that was. I'm pretty sure it was so that we could get the time to get Jake Cooper on, and then the PA announcer sort of played along on the ruse as well, announcing that Cooper was coming on for Behrens. But the referee was saying, no, he's not. And then eventually everyone was waiting for the substitution, so the ref, as he did for most of the game, gave up and allowed the sub. So, well done, Joey. At least you've got a brain.
Some good, solid gamesmanship. And Reading held out in those final few minutes to take, as I said, what was a very much deserved point. A few comments on the game before I get your final thoughts, Johnny, from the listeners. Hugh says, when will the Championship referees learn not to be the centre of attention? We sort of touched on that. Tim says, first game of the season for me, what I saw had promise and better than last year. Let's see where we are after 10 games. Notorious says, happy with the performance. We played well. Maybe Joey could calm down, though. And Daniel Walker said, games like that make you happy to be a Reading fan. Lots of quality in the squad and a team performance throughout. All fairly agreeable statements, really. As I said, I don't really want to sit here and slam referees. I don't know if that was an attention seeker. I think there's a difference in attention. I tend to think of attention-seeking performance by referees as one where they're blowing up for everything,
mm-hmm.
And really making sort of efforts. They separate themselves from players.
I don't think any referee attempts to bring attention on themselves.
The occasional one
might
do.
I think the attention is drawn to the referee when they make a number of decisions. I don't think any referee goes into a game and says, I want to be the subject of this game. I don't think
I want to get on the telly.
Yeah, well, pretty much. He certainly did, didn't he? As for the team performance, I mean, we brought him up, but I thought Kermigan deserved a word because I thought that was, if not the best, if not one of the best performance I've seen from him in a Reading shirt. Okay, he didn't score, but the good thing about his chances was most of them he fashioned for himself. Yeah. He's not the tallest guy, but that leap he got on, I think it was Lewis Dunk, who's a good 4 inches taller than him, to head onto the bar, a chance he created himself. The Hovied kick, again, a chance he created himself. He did everything but score. I think he had one nearly cleared off the line as well. So that was the most encouraging performance I've seen from Kermigan in a Reading shirt so far. Yeah,
and he needed it as well because he had a slowish start. He didn't do much at Newcastle or Wolves, and even against Plymouth. He struggled to really impose himself. So a good timely performance from him with players like Joseph Mendes and Dominic Samuel, who we'll come on to later, sort of getting themselves back to fitness. So hopefully he just needs that goal or a couple of goals to get him into the rhythm, and hopefully that will continue. Finished on van den Berg because this was, Sophie did our player ratings, gave him a 5 out of 10. Now, for those of you who sit and look at our player ratings and say, oh, why is nobody getting 8 or 9 and why isn't people getting 3 or 4? Just to clarify here, 99% of the time, you're going to get a 5, a 6, or a 7. And we decided on that as a website because certain players were getting random rogue marks, like a random 10 out of 10 or a 2 out of 10.
I distinctly remember a Pavel Pogrebniak 1 out of 10 after we got humped by Bournemouth. I think it was handbags.
I think it was handbags
and
himself.
To be fair, I agreed with him on that 1 out of 10. It was possibly the most disgraceful performance I've ever seen from anyone.
But the reason we've gone for sort of a more narrow sort of band of markings is because we run a player ratings over the season. We do player of the month and things like that. It was to stop sort of stray performances and stray marks really costing people. So if you see a 5, it means they've just generally had a little bit below par a game. 6, they've done perfectly fine. Decent performance, you can be happy. And 7 means they've had a good game. They've sort of had a direct impact on chances or defensive efforts. So if you're getting a 7 on a website, you're doing really well. Yeah, and other places where you might see an 8 or a 9, that's what our 7 is. Mm-hmm. So with that disclaimer out of the way, Sophie gave Joey a 5. And some people were saying on social media that van den Berg was their man of the match. I think Mick Gooding even said that van den Berg was a man of the match. But Johnny, for me, you can't ever give that sort of lofty praise to a man that gets sent off and gives away an own goal.
Couldn't have put it better myself. That one can stay in.
Yeah, you could have put that about yourself. You couldn't have stuttered before.
That's very true. No, you look at the raw stats and you say an own goal and a red card. No, he can't win man of the match. Before he got sent off, I was thinking Joey Vandenberg has really played himself back in the second half. Every Reading fan who was at the game will remember that brilliant tackle he made over in the corner. Yeah. Stop a chance. And you know, that's possibly just one of those, you know, one of the sort of flashpoints or highlights of the game, if you remember. And you look back and think, oh yeah, he did have a good game, he did that tackle. But in the first half, certainly he was under a lot of pressure, scored the own goal, and you know, to get the red card, and I think especially for the stupidity of the first yellow.
Yeah.
I think you've got to be thinking to yourself, you know, you can't do that.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And I said, I thought this was one of his best, if not his best, defensive display. But unfortunately, games are won and lost on moments like that. If Brighton had gone and scored from that free kick, say if Redden had, you know, used up their subs, you would have got slaughtered for it. And the own goal, yeah, okay, maybe there's a bit of slight contact, but be stronger. Mm. It's a man's league. Or a tough woman's league. Whatever tough person you are, it's a tough league. So you've got to be stronger than that, Joey. So just before we move on then to News Bites, Johnny, we've seen two of the bookies' pre-season favourites in Brighton and Newcastle. How big a gap do you think there is between Reading and those sort of sides? Or do you think that they are the sides that will be challenging?
I think they will be. I mean, you look at Brighton before they came into this game, hadn't conceded a goal, had scored 10 in their last three, I think, if you include the EFL Cup or the Carling Cup or the whatever it is Cup. And Newcastle, look, they'd lost their first two games, but everyone knew that they were the best side in the division on paper. Of course, the game isn't won on paper, because if the game was won on paper, then certainly I don't think we would have got a draw against Brighton. I do think that Reading, what you wanted to see from the first few weeks is that Reading will be in games. And I certainly wasn't optimistic that Reading would fight as well as they have throughout the first few weeks of the season. And like I said earlier, I think the important thing is that not only the fans believe, but the players believe. Because the players, like I said, will look back at those two performances and they'll say, yeah, we did well in that game. And they'll go into the game in Cardiff and they'll say, yeah, you know, we can definitely win this. Had we gone into it on the back of three or four losses, the players would be starting to question it, the fans would be starting to question it, and that negative atmosphere, which has been around the club for 4 or 5 years, would just continue.
Yeah.
Whereas I think now, there is, if not a positivity, then certainly a hope that that we could be, you know, rebuilding something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, mentioned at the top of the show, Reading are above the relegation places on goal difference alone.
Hey, but we're two points off the playoffs.
I was going to say, I think a win could possibly put us inside the top five. So that shows how the league has opened up. And there's been no real mega strong sides. All of the pre-season favourites have had their blips already this season. Mm. Now QPR win their first couple and they lose. Sheffield Wednesday go and get beat at Burton. Newcastle, as we mentioned, they lost their first couple. So it's anybody's league, and it's about who's the most consistent over 46 games. So we'll remain to be seen who is the strongest come May. But Reading's chances of being stronger have been boosted by a couple of signings, and we'll talk about that in News Bites.
Reading News Bites
on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Johnny, I love when the transfer window is open. For one reason alone, it's because we get to talk about signings. Well, most windows we don't actually get to talk about signings, but I love this transfer window because they keep on coming. Two men through the door since we recorded episode 98. The first of them, somewhat underwhelming. Sorry, Sandro. Sandro Visser. A Liechtenstein midfielder who has joined from Thun in the Swiss League. He's arrived on a free transfer. A holding midfielder, a tough tackler, Johnny. One particular incident in his past gaining lots of notoriety.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people will have gone onto YouTube to see what Visser can do. And I don't think that they would have been expecting what they saw. I've still refused to watch the video because I hate stuff like that.
Yeah, I've seen it, and it's not one of these David Boost horror videos where you just scream. I mean, I mean, you do go, oh, but it's not as in a kind of I never want to see that again style tackle. So
yeah.
You can watch it, but it's a late tackle. It's a bad tackle. It's an incident that ended the opposition player's career and saw Visser. Criminal charges were brought up. He was sued, and he eventually was fined £7,000 by the courts. The Swiss League independently suspended him for 6 games as well. He's apologised for it. He says there was no malice intended. And bear in mind, this was a couple of years ago now when he was a young man. Hopefully he's matured somewhat. But with him and Joey Vandenberg in the side, Johnny, this could get a little bit tasty.
Absolutely. I think we could be struggling to keep 9 men on the pitch. Well, certainly 10 men on the pitch at the end of the game.
Yeah, some people have said that, you know, why have we gone and signed another midfielder? Can you see the logic behind it, or do you think this is maybe a little bit overkill?
I don't think it's overkill. I think what you're seeing more and more with Yapstam is, and we sort of speculated this, me and Dave, at the start of the season, is very much it's the front three attack, the middle three sort of sit, and the back four defend, if you like. Although we've seen Gunter in a beta bombing on a little bit more. I think what you're going to see is players like Visa and Evans and possibly Vandenberg in there just sitting, just keeping things ticking over, essentially, and maybe have one of Swift and Williams to sort of charge forward, because ultimately what Yapstam wants to do is keep the ball, probe, and eventually get the, you know, make the right opportunity. So if you've got those players in there who are comfortable on the ball, comfortable sitting back, then I think that's what he wants.
Yeah, it's another example of the rough diamond sort of strategy that Reading, that we've said throughout this season, that Reading have to go for due to their financial circumstances. This is a man that he's still only 23 years of age. He came through the ranks with Basel, who are one of the best, if not the best, Swiss side regularly in the Champions League. So a decent standard, admittedly not in the best league in the world, but he came through a good club and he went to Hoffenheim, who you may remember we sold Gylfi Sigurdsson to. So they're a Bundesliga side. He got his move there. It didn't quite work out for him. And it's again just Reading trying to get something out of a player that's maybe stuttering. And that's kind of the old Reading way. It's what they used to do. It's, you know, remember they picked up people like Stephen Hunt after they'd been released from teams like Brentford.
Yeah.
So
this is the thing, you know, we're signing a lot of players that aren't really on our or the casual fans' radar, if you like. I mean, you look at sort of our 10 transfer signings, and perhaps the only one that you really think that you would have heard of before Reading signed them is Liam Moore. Sorry for that spoiler. We've signed Liam Moore. But yeah, you know, you can't say that any of them, except perhaps Swift and Behrens, have looked, you know, like they are ready for this step up, if you like, to the Championship. None of them have looked terribly out of place either. And there's been excitement generated by many of them as well.
And this is it. I mean, it's a free transfer for a young player who's presumably not going to be... and the nice thing is it's not the sort of signings that blighted the Zingarevich era. The high-earning players like your Drentas and your Pogrebniaks and your Guthries that, if they fail, they're so hard to move on. These are the type of players that their wages are probably so low that... Mm. Some team will pick them up, or
You can't imagine that someone who plays for Liechtenstein will be saying, look, I'm playing for the team that's ranked 150th in the world. Come on, give me a big contract.
Yeah, and the very fact is that if they're not on big money, they're more likely to sort of say, I'll take a free transfer. Mm. Because certain other players will quite happily sit there going, well, I'm earning 40 grand a week. No one, I've played so badly, nobody else is going to pay me that. Mm. So again, it's a low-cost plan. And yes, for every Kevin Doyle, you're going to get a Brett Williams, Carl Shepherd and Dave Mooney. But you only need a certain amount of these players to hit.
Sorry, Carl, Dave and the other one.
Brett. You know, heroes in their time.
Oh, yeah.
I think between
them. Gone but never forgotten.
I don't think they made a Reading League appearance between them, actually, the three of those.
I think Mooney might have done.
I know Mooney played in the League Cup.
He certainly played in the League Cup.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, I said it's a numbers game.
Nice little reminiscer package there.
Indeed. It's a numbers game. And Reading only need, out of these 10 signings, if 5 of them turn out to be good, job done.
And the other thing you forget is we lost 10 players in the summer in terms of loans, in terms of free transfers. So really, we're just replenishing the stock.
Yeah. I mean, 6 loans went out. You lost 3 players on contract expiry, and then you sold Norwood. You sold...
Could be selling more.
Tischboller.
Could be selling Gunter.
Well, I hope we're not selling more. He's only just signed, Johnny.
Hey, you don't know the release clause.
No, indeed. And Mr. Moore, as Johnny gave away earlier, just in case you haven't heard the news, after a protracted and prolonged negotiation period with Leicester City, Reading have signed the centre-back come right-back, Mr. Liam Moore. He is also 23. He's only 4 days. There's 4 days difference in the birthday of our 2 signings this week. There's your trivia.
Did one sign 4 days after the other as well?
Ooh. I think it was about 3 or 4 days, maybe. Well, so were they might have been the same age. Anyway, that's really going into beyond.
That's tenuous. Yeah.
That's really deep handbags level sort of stats. Yeah. Sorry, Dave. So yeah, it's the signing we all wanted, Johnny. We've talked about this for weeks on this show. Experienced, proven quality championship player. The rumoured fee is about £1.5 million. 4-year deal. It's a player with great... He's going to keep his value. He's only going to get better. And he's already helped one team get out of this league. He played 30 times for Leicester when they won this division. So you know he's got the quality. Yes, he hasn't had the best of times in the last couple of seasons. But overall, you can't help but see this as a positive.
No, and I think it's a real big credit to him as well to perhaps leave the Champions. And it's obviously going to be a very good feel-good season there in Leicester. And I'm sure that he will have enjoyed last year as well. Even if he wasn't playing, he will have just enjoyed being along for the ride. But he's come out and said now, no, look, I want to make a career for myself. Because you can understand Leicester wanting to keep him on. If the worst happens and they get relegated, he's a very good player who can compete at Championship level. But for him, you know, I think you've got to remember that players aren't just pawns of clubs. They are individuals. They're people too. And obviously Liam has come out and done that. And I think as well, you know, for Reading, I mean, you know, you say about the long protracted saga and patience, etc., with the owners, but Reading wanted him. Leicester didn't want to let him go. I mean, you look at someone like Paul Pogba and Man United. They didn't just give up when Juve said, 80 million. No, we want a little bit more. It's these negotiations don't just, it's not just a case of phoning someone up and saying, we want him. Here's that. Okay, no, that's cool. He's yours. They take a very long time, even if we don't hear about it in the public. So yeah, credit to everyone for finally getting the deal over the line. And yeah, I think, let's be honest, he's going to go straight into the team, if not because of the suspension to Van den Berg, but just because he's an actual centre-back.
Yeah, we've got a few questions on what his role and who he might partner coming up in the mailbag, so we'll get onto that then. But one person who he could end up partnering hasn't arrived at the football club at the moment, but he was at the Medeski Stadium on Saturday, Johnny. Tyler Blackett, Manchester United defender, was in the stands on Saturday against Brighton. He's very close to a loan move, by all accounts. Charles Watts, our podcast extra co-host, reported in Get Reading today that he's had a medical at Reading. And it looks like this is one that's going to happen. Johnny, this was a bloke that, you know, less than 2 years ago was being talked about as a potential sort of Manchester United regular defender. I mean, he got 12 games for Louis van Gaal's United side. Admittedly, that's not a vintage United side, but it's still a top... You know, it was a top eight Premier League side.
Yeah, absolutely. And he certainly didn't look out of place in those appearances, I don't think. It seems like a very good signing. If it's only on loan, then, you know, that's absolutely fine. What you don't want is what we had last year where, and to a certain extent, we felt the repercussions of it, where we've had to bring in 10, 12 players because you only had these players for a year or for 6 months. Whereas when you've only got one and you've got a squad of the rest of the players, I think it's a very good move for a player who has got Premier League experience. And certainly I think I don't necessarily see a future for him at Manchester United, so he'll be wanting to impress.
This is it.
He'll be wanting to, especially with Jose Mourinho there, who has frozen out Marcus Rashford so far. I think he'll be wanting to show that he can do a job at this level or at a higher level.
Yeah, and this was it. And Brian McDermott touched on this. He said he only wanted to sign loan players that he could reasonably expect to sign at the end of it. And Blackett, I think, is the sort of player that would be on Reading's radar in 12 months' time. Because either he has... I mean, admittedly, he might have an absolutely stunning time down at Reading and Manchester United might want him back, or a bigger side might come back. But in all likelihood, he's just going to have a good season and Reading will sit there and go, you know what, 23-year-old player, a bit like Liam Moore. Manchester United probably won't demand the world from him and they can look to sign him. So, and you know, there was speculation that his time at Celtic didn't quite... He only got 3 games out on loan when he went there last year. Some were saying his attitude wasn't right. But if you're going to sort of get your head in the right place, no better man to do it than Yapstam. If you're a defender and you go to work for a bloke like that, you're going to listen to what he's got to say.
Absolutely. And I think it's that link coming in again, especially being a Manchester United boy as Blackett is and as Stam was. We've seen a number of players. I think Liam Moore himself, another defender, said, I really wanted to work with Yapstam. He definitely said that on the official video anyway. So you can see as well that this is not only just the owners getting, you know, finally backing a manager. It's also the players who Stam is bringing in, respecting Stam and wanting to play for Stam.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the intangibles. You know, we debated this at length. Now, I wasn't the greatest fan of the decision at the time to get rid of McDermott, but I can only judge Stam. You know, that's an aside issue. on the Stam issue, I mean, this is great, and this is a sort of benefit that you get from having a big name manager, and kudos for getting someone like that to the club, because if it just gives you that extra 1%, like Reading had a few years ago, Reading's extra 1% was that whole family vibe, wasn't it? It was that close-knit togetherness.
That all for one, one for all.
Yeah, and it got them the edge in certain negotiations over other clubs. Right now, they've got the Stam effect to give them a nudge. You know, sorry, Owen Coyle, but if you have a player choosing between Blackburn and Reading, do I want to work for Owen Coyle? Do I want to work for Yap Stam? Chances are, if that's all it's come down to, Stam's got the edge.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
So it remains to be seen what we'll do for the rest of the transfer window. As I said, there are still 8 days to go. A striker still apparently on the radar. Talk transfers with Charles on Friday on the Podcast Extra, and will be again this week as well, so stay tuned for that. Should be an exciting one, Johnny, because we'll at least be in the race, I'd imagine, for a striker or two.
Yeah, and as I sort of speculated earlier, I don't think this is the end of interest for players for our clubs. I think there's been too much speculation over the last few weeks for suddenly everything to go cold, and all it takes, as we've seen, is for one little move somewhere higher up the chain, and suddenly those moves are all coming down to us.
Indeed, indeed. And one to keep an eye on. And just sort of end the news bites this week by announcing the sad news again that Haraldsson Kanu's still not got a club, Johnny. We need to start chipping in for him.
I'd like to quote the famous, rest his soul, Kurt Cobain here. He said, "It's better to burn out than to fade away."
Yeah,
the maybe last memory people will have of Haraldsson Kanu, perhaps, that wonder goal in the Euros, rather than sort of banging them in for Portsmouth at Fratton Park or something. go out on a high, Hal.
He's playing a very risky game, because he's either going to get a Premier League panic buy, or he's going to fall into the Championship.
Well, the thing is, West Ham do need a striker now that they've got Ayew and Carroll injured. So
and he was watching their game against Chelsea,
he was. On the one hand, you've got Wilfred Bonny available from Manchester City. And on the other hand, you got Haraldsson Kanu.
The irony of Haraldsson Kanu having to sit out games from Mikel Antonio. the delightful yet sad irony there. Anyway, I'm not going to waste much more time on that guy. You know, out of the 99 podcasts, he's probably appeared on 80 of them. Or probably 98 of them. So,
well, I don't know whether that speaks for him or for us, really.
Yeah, answers on a postcard, bitter. Folks. And speaking of answers on postcards, or more appropriately, answers on tweets, it's time to head into the mailbag.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
So, mailbag time. Thank you to everyone who has contributed this week via at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com for your emails. And those of you who have visited the Facebook page at facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. We start this week's mailbag with Nick Beckett. He says, "I remember Sir John Modesky saying the new owners had extremely deep pockets just after they took over. I'm not blaming him, but what happened?"
Well, I think Dave has sort of touched on this in the past, is that perhaps the rumours were that they weren't particularly cash rich. They were very asset rich. And also, I mean, you only have to look at what has happened in the last few years with the shift of power from Samrit. Was that his name? Oh, remember him.
Samrit came sort of, was the initial figurehead before sort of disappearing, yeah.
To Sasima, and now it's to Tiger. So in that sense, you only have to see, perhaps there was a bit of confusion at board level, you know, who actually owns the checkbook, if you like. Whereas now it seems, now it very much does seem, after sort of 3 years treading water, that we actually are making for the shore.
Also,
like,
more importantly, just because someone's got a load of money doesn't mean that they want to pour it all into a football club.
No, no, and there's no pressure on them to do that either.
We've seen lots of rich owners in other clubs, in other sports, that just, you know, they're rich for a reason. They're usually good businessmen. And sometimes they just don't want to pour money. And also, if you keep continuously pouring money into a football club, you can get lazy and people can get complacent. So not necessarily the worst thing to keep us on an even keel. But it remains to be seen how strong the investment goes when the final parachute payment ends after this season. That is going to be the real acid test. Right, Keith says, "After Gareth McCleary's trickery, leaving their player on his ass, what is your best skillful moment by a Reading Football Club player?"
Two nominations here. One is the very famous Glenn Little goal away at Plymouth, where He turned his man inside out, I think, a few times, as Glenn Little loved to do.
Sounds painful.
And then chipped it over, is it Michel Kuipers? Or is that
no, that was the Brighton guy. Roman Lario.
Roman Lario. I think. Yeah, it might be him. But chipped it over him from about 25 yards, right into the top corner. brilliant skill in the build-up and in the finish. And the other one, it's got to be Jimmy Kebbe with his socks. Pull your socks up.
Excellent. I was going to say Jimmy Kebbe's goal against Leicester. I'm not even sure if Kebbe finished off the move now, but he burst about 80 yards.
I remember it.
I can't remember. He pulled it back for Noel Hunt, I think.
I thought Kebbe... I can't remember that one.
Yeah, see, it's so famous, I can't remember the ending. Oh, but what I remember is the run.
Jimmy Kebbe running. Run, Kebbe.
Bolted down the flank.
Good reference, I like that.
So, you know, you feel free to shout us the answer. We can hear you, honestly. Ah, yes, that was the one.
Yeah.
So that moment, and of course, Brynjar Gunnarsson's nutmeg at Anfield.
Yes, of course.
To set up Shane Long's goal.
The most perfect start to the most perfect finish of a goal ever.
Yeah. Also, notable mention for Lee Nogan's trickery in the penalty area at Wembley in 95. One of the most underrated Wembley goals ever. And I think just in Reading history, I think that goal would obviously be so much more famous if we'd won that game. But it was a goal that deserved to grace the Wembley turf. So those are a few of our moments. Please send yours in as well. We'd like to hear a few of yours. Be good reading to see what you've got to make of that. And I'm sure we've missed plenty of magical moments over the years. Dave McCormack, who does the alternative view up on thetilesn.com, he says, who starts with Liam Moore? Arguably, Joe Vandenberg has been has been in better form than McShane. So would you start Moore and Joey?
No. The problem I have with Joey Vandenberg as a centre-back is he doesn't have... I always feel like he's about to make a mistake. And sure enough, he's made mistakes in just about every game we played. Centre-back, with any position on the field, it's not just a position that you can drop into suddenly and pick it up. It's all about holding the line. It's all about spacing naturally between all the other players. It's about positional awareness. And I think you've got to start the natural centre-back and arguably the most talismanic leader we've got at this club.
The club captain.
Exactly. You know, that's not to say that Joey has played badly. I think he's made a few mistakes, but on the whole, he's been solid. But I don't trust him.
He's a mistake waiting to happen. I mean, we looked at some of the goals earlier.
He's a mistake that has happened, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he scored an own goal. He's got a red card and he's gone missing. I feel 10 times better with him in that defensive midfield slot. Like with Michael Hector, who had that mistake in him at centre-back that would cost Reading games.
Mm.
Joey's got that game-costing trick in his locker. Whereas if he goes slightly forward in front of the defence, he's got someone else to bail him out.
Mm.
I don't feel confident because, like you say, you need someone to organise the defence.
Mm.
And if you have a back four that is Jordan Obita, Joey Vandenberg, Liam Moore and Chris Gunter, you've not got a lot of leaders there. So I think you need that stopper, that experience. Mm. The man who's been there and done it in this league in McShane. I think McShane and Moore is the partnership going forward.
Just a couple of points. You mentioned Michael Hector briefly. Good debut for Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, red card.
Getting sent off. And another one, and this is just something that I kind of thought of off the cuff about a week ago. Is it easy to look good in the defensive midfield position?
Yes. And I had this discussion with Dave on
last
the show.
Week, yeah, I did listen.
Good man. We appreciate both your download and your listen, but mostly the download. I think it is. I think you get that time and the space, especially if a team is pushing the opposition back. You can look really good.
Because we have had a long list of players who have looked good in that position. Evans suddenly seems to be coming into form. Tish Boller, everyone raved about him. Me less so, admittedly. Michael Hector looked immense, especially at Wembley when he played
Norwood.
In that position. Norwood, even going back to people like Guthrie. And even going back to someone like James Harper, who had a very similar, a different formation, but a very similar role.
That's what I was going to say. The beauty and why someone like a Harper was more effective because he did it in a four. He did it in a four-man midfield rather than a five. He had more pressure on him and was able to still keep the ball ticking over.
But that was all Harper did, wasn't it? Get the ball, give it to someone else and Harry.
And it worked.
And he looked brilliant doing it.
So one for you guys. Do you think that the central defensive midfielder position is one to make you, that you can look better in?
It's not simple. But players can make it look easy. Mm. Or does the position make the players look good?
Again, let us know your thoughts. Freddie Errington, any thoughts on the likes of Fosu, Stacey, Barrett and Samuel this year? More loan moves to them this season. Well, the good news is, Johnny, I didn't bring this up in News Bites because I was waiting for this question and I didn't forget it, honest. Was it Dom Samuel came through an under 23 game today? He played against Tottenham. Unfortunately, they lost 4-1. But great to see him back out on the pitch. He's over his latest niggle and seemingly in contention, you know, to start a game like that. Hopefully, he'll be part of Stam's thinking, especially because on the same day, Yaku Mate seems to have been ruled out of the MK Dons game and probably for around a week, it seems, with after he rolled his ankle. Out of those names, for me, I think Samuel is the only one that's going to be around the squad, at least until Christmas.
Possibly Stacey as well. I think Stacey's certainly looked impressive in the games that I've seen him. He's got a very good build for a winger, I think, especially in the Stam mould. And I think those two players are players that Stam will appreciate as well. They're more quite pacey, quite direct players. And that's very much in the mould of his sort of front three, the 4-3-3, if you like.
Yeah, I think you can appreciate all of them. I mean, Barrett, for the age he's at, has already shown that he's not overwhelmed in this division, but it does make much more sense for him to play more, especially now it's under 23 football, and he'll get the experience in the EFL Trophy as well. Makes sense to, you know, not rush him through. He's got a long career ahead of him. And the same for Fosu as well, because Fosu has shown it in flashes. He needs to do it over a long slog of a season. To be fair, if any of them went out on loan, with the possible exception of Samuel, who I think has served his time on loan, I wouldn't complain. So I certainly see Fosu, Stacey and Barrett going out, or at least staying in under-23s. Samuel needs to be in and around the first team, because if he's not making an impact now, he's going to struggle. As Ed said, he's done his time out on loan, he's been with a few different clubs, now it's time to make an impact. So he's got to knuckle down, because he's got to get past the likes of Joseph Mendes, Yaku Mate, mentioned Kermigan, also Gareth McCleary's playing further forward as well, so Roy Behrens. So he's got some competition. Let's hope he can rise to the challenge. Tim Colley, does Joey Vandenberg have all the qualities of a cult hero?
Yes. I think when he's not getting sent off, absolutely.
Bit of a Ricky Newman type figure, isn't he?
Yeah, although I don't quite look back at Ricky Newman as cult hero.
I've not had a lot of cult heroes in recent years. Did Pog elevate himself to cult hero status?
Slightly. I guess so. People look back on Pog, certainly with a few funny images. Parky, bit of a cult
hero.
He's just
more of a legend, isn't he?
Rather than a proper legend. Rather than cult hero.
Be like Matiovsky was a bit of a cult legend. He was a bit of a divisive figure.
Yeah.
But
I suppose he can be, because he's the sort of player that you think, oh, Joey, you've got another red card. Oh, Joey, you've shockingly timed that challenge. Oh, Joey. He's that sort of player, isn't he?
He's going to get a reaction.
Once a game, he'll have an old Joey.
Yeah, he's never going to be out of a game, is he? He's never going to have a quiet, I'm not going to notice you, 6 out of 10 game. He's going to either do some mazy dribble that gets him into trouble, or some mazy dribble that sets up a goal, or said gets a stupid booking, a red card, or even scores. So he's been in every single game we've played this season. We've had something to talk about with him.
I bet you in a couple of months, Hugh RFC Van der Lyle will be tweeting us saying, when will Joey Vandenberg not try to be the centre of attention?
There's your challenge, Hugh. Stuart, is Behrens doing enough for you? A few tricks here and there, but not impacting matches as much as he should. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's the typical winger syndrome, isn't it, really? Although, yeah, I think he's done a lot more than previous wingers at this club have done. I mean, he hit the bar against Newcastle. He obviously scored against Plymouth. That is
the free kick for Swift?
That's true as well. I mean, this is something that I've long thought about Gareth McCleary, is that for all his brilliant running and, you know, crosses into the box, how many of them actually found their target? And it's good to see that McCleary is getting back on form. With Behrens, it's a very small sample size, 4 or 5 games. I haven't seen not enough from him. I've seen enough from him to think that he can be productive.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the Plymouth game. He was fantastic. And then I thought he was only in sort of second gear and he was dominating. I think he's the type of player that will thrive against, you know, sort of weakerish teams. But bear in mind, you know, we're judging these players and a lot of them impressed against Preston and Plymouth, two who are going to be weaker sides. But the others, I mean, Wolves are spending a lot of money. They've signed another familiar face today. Ola John. Add to Borthwick Jackson as well, and their new owners seem to be happy to splash the cash, so they're going to be there or thereabouts at the end of the season. Brighton, as we mentioned, were leaders, and Newcastle. So not massively fair to judge such an attacking player like Behrens on the base of these games. It's how he does against the weaker sides that is going to sort of impact him. And as we mentioned, he's done enough and been involved in enough goals already to sort of show his what he's got in his locker.
Yeah.
And as we mentioned as well, they've got the players that can replace him as well. So it's not make or break. We're not entirely relying on him. So, yeah, that's us on Behrens. And finishing off the mailbag, Michael Dakin. We've signed Liam Moore. Two questions. Who drops out for him and what other signings do you want to see? We've covered that first point already. But just rounding off the mailbag, for me, it's pretty much just a striker. If we sign another striker, I'm happy. And a great goalkeeper would be fantastic, but I don't think that's going to happen. So realistically, just a striker for me.
Just going to call up Man City, say we can promise Joe Hart first team football. Although he's prone to a mistake as well, so I'm not sure it'd be much of an upgrade. Yeah, I think if you bring in too many more players, you're really going to upset the balance of the squad. I think now that we've got, well, you know, we must have 20, 25 first team-ish players on the books. Now we do have a lot of games in things like the EFL Trophy and the Under-21 League, but you're not going to satisfy everyone if you bring in four or five more players. I mean, we've already brought in an unprecedented amount of players. If we can bring in a top-level striker, even if it's one on loan, I'd be very happy with that. Goalkeeper, less pressing, if only because we've got three decent, if not outstanding, keepers here already at the moment.
Yeah, no, I agree. I said it's just, if there was like a brilliant keeper out there, as in a long-term goalkeeper out there that you could sign, I would certainly think that's still a position that needs an upgrade. Possibly another full-back. I mean, Tenno Watson's good, Gunter's fine. Abita's okay. It's Blackett and Moore can both sort of fill in at fullback, I guess, but maybe sort of another left back to really push Abita.
But then you're getting into the numbers issue, aren't
exactly.
you?
Exactly.
If you've got three left backs, exactly. two right backs, four centre backs, you know.
So
Stam's got a squad now.
Yeah, I think he's just about there. That on the presumption that this Blackett deal goes through, for me, it's just a striker, unless something that's too good to turn down comes along. If there's an outstanding player that's out there and, you know, lands on your doorstep, you've got to pull the trigger. But otherwise, We'll stand pat, as we say. And with that stunning stop of our mailbag.
That pat of a link.
That pat of a link. It's a terrible transition from me, but it's the unprofessional joke you've come to expect after 99 episodes of this show. It's time to move on to any other business. Two more games to preview, starting with the MK Dons in the EFL Cup.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business?
So it's back to cup action, as mentioned. The MK Dons visit the Maleski Stadium for the second round of the EFL Cup. They got to this stage by beating Newport 3-2 away from home in the first round. Johnny, a team we faced a couple of times in the Championship last season. We didn't beat them. Unfortunately, they ended the season relegated, the victims of Neil Warnock's remarkable surge at Rotherham. But at the start of this season, they've played four, they've won two, they've drawn one and lost one. Both their wins, though, interestingly, have come away from home. So added to that, Newport, they probably actually fancy their chances away from Stadium MK. The bookies have it. Reading are 4-1 strong, 4-1 on strong favourites to qualify. MK Dons 11-4. Have the bookies got it about right? Hashtag gambleaware.
I think so. I think now Yapstam, he might. We saw in the first game against Plymouth, he named pretty much full strength side, didn't he? I think he only made three changes, but I don't think there were many too many changes he could have made. Now he's got a bigger squad, a lot more mouths to feed, if you like, so he might make a few more changes. You know, I think the way we dominated inferior sides so far, you would almost expect us to win, and there haven't been too many games we've gone to at the Maleski recently where we expect Reading to win.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see it on the tarlhurstend.com tomorrow morning, but I've spoken to an MK Dons fan, Matt, and he sort of said, you know, Carl Robinson, their manager, doesn't treat this cup very seriously until they get into sort of the more financially and lucrative rounds. If you look at their team from the last round, from the first round, only two of the players that featured in the first round played in their last league game on Saturday. There's not a lot of names from that first League Cup game that A, you even recognise, or B, that you think could seriously hurt you. But then again, underestimating opposition can often be your downfall. So it's one to not underestimate. I think I would like to see Stam do what he did last time, tweaks rather than wholesale changes. The international break is just around the corner, so not necessarily worried about overburn quite yet. So give a lot of players a chance. Maybe rest some of the older guys, a Kermigant, a McShane. You might see Moore go alongside Cooper, for example. But otherwise, sort of keep it muchly as it is.
Keep the momentum.
Indeed, indeed. Get a win to go to Cardiff with. We don't count this in Prediction League, but thoughts?
2-0. Solid.
Yeah, I'm going to go a bit stronger than that. I'm going to say 4-1. I think Reading are going to run right.
That's a pound a goal, isn't it? Or £1.40 a goal. Bargain.
Yep, something like that. So get yourself down to the Landstad. And then after that, it's a trip down the M4, back into Championship action, away at Cardiff. They're a side that have had a similar start to Reading, really. They've won one, they've drawn two, and they've lost one. Their home record this year is 1-1 and lost one. The bookies, harder to separate on this one. Cardiff favourites, as you'd expect from the home side. They're 13-10. But Reading themselves are 2-1, so not a lot in it. The draw is 12-5. But a Cardiff team that are, you look at it on paper, Johnny, and it's a very strong, established, sort of experienced Championship outfit.
Yeah, it's another one of those teams that you look at that team and you go, oh, I wouldn't mind having him. Wouldn't mind having him. Wouldn't mind having him. It's, yeah, like you say, it's a side that you know is going to compete at Championship level. It's just whether we on the day can outwit or outwork them. And yeah, you have to say, after the last couple of games, you're certainly more encouraged that we can do that.
Yeah, some familiar faces in that Cardiff lineup. We've got Matt Conley, who was part of the league-winning side here. Shaun Morrison, obviously. One familiar face that won't be involved is Adam Lafondre, who seems to have been frozen out there.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Someone tweeted Adam Lafondre saying, "Are you coming back to Cardiff, mate?" And he said, "I'm at Cardiff now, mate."
I noticed there was an article in Wales Online, sort of, with the journalist suggesting that Adam Lafondre might be the answer to their goal scoring woes. And if you did look at that team, you would say striker is where they're sort of missing. They've got a very strong core of players. I mean, you look at the defence and, you know, Marshall, Connolly, Peltier, Morrison, and Gunnison, Aaron Gunnison, very strong, sort of, Declan John, sorry, in that defence as well. Very strong outfit, and midfielders like Rules and Whittingham, and Johnny hasn't even turned his phone off. That's the unprofessional joke you get here. For that, Johnny, you can finish my thought on the depth of that back line.
Yeah, you know, like I said, it's a solid Championship back line. I mean, you mainly David Marshall as well in goal. I think he's capped for Scotland, and you know, he's certainly a very experienced player as well. So they'll be a tough side to break down, and you would imagine that they would have the nous to combat us as well, certainly with our attack and movement.
Okay, well, money where your mouth is then. Prediction League time. And after the first four stops on the Championship carousel, it is one Wimb who is in the lead of the Prediction League. As I mentioned, I was the only one.
Fix.
Absolutely, I've been colluding with the team.
Colluding with myself. Putting it on public record, but somehow changing it. I don't trust
Indeed. Well, as I mentioned, I was the only one who said that Reading would get a result against Brighton. That gave me a point.
This unfounded positivity, where's it all come from?
I know, outrageous. And we all predicted that Reading would get beat at Newcastle, though none of us got the correct score. So, after four games, the standings are, I am on 5 points, and you've got a bunch on 2, including Johnny, Dave and Westy, and then, unfortunately, Charles Watts propping up the rear. We're just a single point so far.
Confident. Mid-table mediocrity. It's okay. It's not how you start, it's how you finish.
As you found out last year, Johnny.
Indeed.
So, in an attempt to win yourself back into the lead, how do you see this one on Saturday going?
2-1 to Cardiff. I think we are still having ups and downs. And, you know, as we've seen with Newcastle, they lost their first two games, but that didn't mean that they were going to lose a third game. Just because we've had two good performances doesn't mean we're going to put in another one. I think Cardiff might just have a bit too much for us.
Yeah, I'm going to go for another draw. I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw. I think Reading are going to nick something here. So there we have it. I will get the predictions of Westy and Dave over the next coming days. And hopefully you'll be able to hear Charles's prediction on the Podcast Extra on Friday, all things being well, of course. Always subject to late cancellation. It's, you know, we leave it to Friday. And unfortunately, it means if something goes wrong on Friday, it doesn't leave us any margin for errors. But we will do our best. And that just about wraps up this week's show. That is 99 in the books. Now, I mentioned earlier we had some things in the pipeline for episode 100. I'm not going to say what they are because they could fall completely flat. And so on that basis, I don't want to build up hopes. But we will be back for an episode 100.
Wouldn't that just be an unprofessional joke of an unprofessional joke?
It would be, yes. And I mentioned
the inception of unprofessional jokes.
Indeed. And I mentioned that we might have an interview on last week's show. Unfortunately, the reason I didn't say who it was is because unfortunately it did fall through at the last minute. It is a... I will say this much. It's an active player. So when things like that happen, certain things can happen. It's not been cancelled, it's been postponed. At least I hope it's been postponed. So apologies for that. We are doing our best to try and get some more interviews over the season. We know that there are popular features. It's just a case of trying to find the time to sit down and talk to these people. As you can imagine, so recording two podcasts as it is every week, it's tricky to find extra time. But we'll do our best. Got a few irons in the fire, so stay tuned. And if you're in contact with a player, by all means, drop us an email. If you know somebody that might be of interest on the show, we'll try and get them on. But in the meantime, as I said, stay tuned to thetarlhurstend.com. Plenty of great content analysis. A quick plug as well for the Star Fans Forum and AGM. If you wanted to ask your questions to Yapstam, here's your chance, folks. I believe it's a week Thursday. Just double check the Star website for further info. It's open to all Star members and you can join up on the day. I said you can stand as well if you've often thought, oh, well, Star, you know, what do they do? Go along yourself, stand for nomination. All you've got to do is find a couple of members to nominate you and you can have your say. You can be on the board and help lead the group whatever way you fancy. And as mentioned, that's then followed by a fans forum with Yapstam. Obviously, I don't know what Stam's going to deliver, Johnny, but I know, you know, me and you have both been to previous fans forums at Star, and at least in my opinion, I mean, they're great. You get such great stories that you just wouldn't get in the regular press.
And I think especially at this stage of the season, it'll be interesting to, you know, to ask him his motivations and what he sees, how he sees the club.
Yeah, and they're meetings that aren't allowed to be reported elsewhere. So if you're not
Chatham House rules.
Indeed. If you're not in the room, you won't get to hear what's said. And credit to Reading fans as well, because I think bar one meeting about 3 or 4 years ago, fans do a really good job at keeping those rules enforced. Because if they break them, then you stop getting the access. And you don't get to hear some of the great off-the-cuff stories. So, one to keep an eye on. I said head over to the Star website for more info on that. TheTarlhurstEnd.com for all your fan opinion and analysis. And Johnny, I'll see you for episode 100. If you're available. Yeah, I haven't discussed this yet, but you know.
Well, you know, I only come out for the big names. So, I'm expecting big things. I'm expecting a party. I'm expecting balloons. You know, I'm expecting a wild reception for episode 100.
I can promise you none of those things.
At least a bottle of water rather than tap water.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, we'll see if we can stretch to it.
What about a bottle of tap water? Can I wrangle you down to that?
What's the phrase? You can polish a turd?
When we've done that for 99 episodes. And on that note, cut one you are. It's funny how the crowd's always
social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/the Tarlhurst End.